KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Now that fall is upon us, the heaters are kicking on, and soon holiday lights will be up in homes. What can you do to ensure that your home is safe from fire? With us today, Captain Shada Stevenson. He's with the Seattle Fire Marshal's office. He's on a two-year tour there. He was just telling me that he usually is working out of the fire department here in the University District, and he's come by to talk to us about some of the things that you might not know about how to keep yourself safe in this season and others. It rains a lot here. Does that make fires less likely?
Actually, no, it doesn't. You know, there's different types of fires. You know, we're more of an urban fire department. There's also wildfires. So, of course, in the summertime, wildfires are definitely they happen more often. But we deal with structure fires and residential fires. And they actually, when it's raining, tends to be cold, and people turn on their heaters, and so those incidents increase.
Fortunately, most of us have not experienced a house fire. But what are some things that you'd like to leave people with to kind of keep in mind if something happens? So a kitchen fire gets out of control, something starts going off upstairs, and you realize that there are flames there. What should you be thinking about? What should you be doing?
So most fires do start in the kitchen, and what you have to know is that how to handle it. First of all, how to avoid it. Keeping your stove clean, keeping oils and stuff cleaned up. And then also, you know, a lot of people hang their dish rags on the stove. You want to keep flammable materials at least 3 feet away from your stove. If you do come up on a situation where you find a fire on your stove and it looks like something you can respond to, you want to grab a lid and first of all, turn the stove off, the fuel off, whatever fuel you're using, and then place the lid on the pot or another pan if possible. And that can often smother the fire. If it looks like it's out of hand, another thing you can do, as long as nobody else is in the kitchen, is as you leave the kitchen, go ahead and close the door, and that'll buy some time and help compartmentalize the fire and keep the products of combustion inside that space. And then leave the building. Make sure your family leaves the building.
Call 911.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it's Thanksgiving is next week, and deep frying turkeys has become more and more popular. And I remember when this craze first started, a lot of stories about people burning their porches down or sometimes burning their entire houses down because they weren't being careful. Do you still get a lot of reports like that around this time of year?
Yeah. Deep fat turkey fires are definitely a concern for us. We would like to see less of it. They present some hazards. You're dipping a turkey in hot oil, and that's a flammable liquid, and it can spill out and cause a lot of injuries. A lot of things people don't realize that when you put that turkey inside the fryer, it's gonna take up a lot of volume, and that often causes the oil to overrun, and that's, as I said before, the grease can really cause injuries when it spills over.
Mm-hmm. Do you still get many reports of problems with it?
You know, I'd have to actually go back and see what the numbers are for turkey-caused fires, and I can get back with you. We have a public education department that you can call, and you can call at 206-386-1450.
Well, one is too many. So so you recommend against deep frying the turkey. But if you're going to do it, I guess stay away from the house, obviously.
Yes.
Don't be close to the house. Be careful about it spilling over on the top. Any other things to keep in mind if people are going to be reckless and go do it anyway?
Yeah, you know, I would probably go ahead and do a dry run, maybe put some water and then see how much volume you take up, and then maybe use that as kind of a guide for how much oil to put in the fryer.
Now, you also often hear this time of year about chimney fires. And I fortunately never had one, but I do get my chimney swept pretty often because of fears that it'll take place. But I've often wondered, well, what do I care if there's a fire in my chimney? It'll just burn out, right? It's surrounded by brick. Why is it a problem?
Well, you know, fires anywhere in your house are a big problem. And just because it starts there doesn't mean it's going to end there. And not all chimneys, you know, they aren't all sealed perfectly, and they can extend once it's on fire. I can't tell you where that fire is going to go, and most chimneys are surrounded by some type of combustible structure member of the building. So a fire in your chimney is a very bad thing. Also, it produces products of combustion, which are really bad for the residents inside the building. It can produce carbon monoxide, which is a tasteless, odorless, colorless gas that can absolutely cause death and ill health effects. So you want to pay attention to that. You want to have your chimney swept. You want to You want to make sure that your flues are open when you're burning, and it's a very important thing if you're going to have those type of fires in your fireplace that it's maintained.
We're talking about fire prevention with Captain Shada Stevenson with the Seattle Fire Marshal's Office, and we're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. It's toll-free, 800-289-5869, or you can write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Now, it's not going to be very long before a lot of people start adding holiday lights to their house. And when it comes to doing that, what are your recommendations? Well, first of all, for maybe some lights to try to avoid, and then if you're going to do it, how to do it safely?
Well, you want to make sure that whatever lights you use are tested by independent agencies such as Underwriters Laboratory. We like the low energy lights that don't produce a lot of heat. You want to make sure you don't overload your electrical cords and your circuits. So you want to stay away from stringing more than three of those lights together. You also want to observe the line itself. Make sure it's not worn. Make sure the bulbs aren't loose. And make sure that everything's in good working condition. We like our appliances plugged directly into the walls, so not using extension cords is key. And then an overlooked hazard with the lights themselves, especially when it comes to lights on your house, is, you know, the process of getting up and hanging them. You want to use extreme caution when doing that because a lot of fall injuries can happen.
Well, a lot of us would like to not use extension cords, but you live in an older house. There aren't a lot of outlets, so you end up plugging a lot of things into extension cords or things. If you're going to do that, do you have any advice on how to do it safely?
Yeah, if you're going to use an extension cord, don't double or triple up on them. Just use one extension cord and make sure it's a higher grade extension cord, not one of these what we call zip cords, which is the skinnier cords another bad thing is they tend to run them under carpets and such. You want to avoid that. So the lighter weight extension cords, you want to avoid altogether. And if you use a heavier extension cord, definitely only one cord. Don't piggyback them on top of each other.
We've got Joyce giving us a call from Shoreline. If you just tuned in, we're talking about fire safety with Captain Shada Stevenson from the Seattle Fire Marshal's Office. We're at 206-543-5869. Joyce, thanks for giving us a call. What's your question?
Well, I'm interested in how often smoking causes fires in multiple unit facilities. I had heard that it was the highest, and then just a few minutes ago I heard your guest say it was actually kitchen fires.
That's a good question, because you often see news accounts of fires that got started because of smoking. How big a problem is that in apartment houses?
My numbers are by residences, period. And as I said before, you can call and start driving more into detailed information. We can get that to you. But I know for sure that in residences, and I'm not separating multi-units from single-family residences, cooking fires are our number one issue and cause of fires. Having said that, in my personal experience, I have seen a lot of fires, basically mattress fires, started by smoking in multifamily residences. So it's definitely an area of concern that I've actually personally experienced.
Joyce, do you live in an apartment building where smoking's allowed?
We're trying to get a non-smoking policy in.
Oh, I see.
Well, you have enough there. I mean, it happens often enough for it to affect your policy.
The insurance. Does it go down, do you think, when you have a non-smoking?
He's not an insurance agent, but do you happen to know offhand whether a non-smoking place has a lower insurance?
You know, I can't officially speak to that. I know it does affect your insurance, how it does, and it would probably vary by the insurance issuer.
Yeah, that's something to check with the agent for your apartment building or your apartment, Joyce. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to Jeanette. She's listening to us today in South Seattle. Jeanette, what's your question?
Is it better to have your fire alarms connected to electricity, or does it really matter? Because I have an option to do that now, and I don't know if I want to spend the money on it.
So that's instead of battery, just have it plugged in?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good...
Yes, Jeanette, I definitely prefer to have it hardwired with a battery backup. Redundancy is never a bad thing when it comes to life safety. So if you can wire it and then have a battery backup, that's optimal.
Okay,
Jeanette,
is it really going to, I mean, you don't think that it's, you think it's because of life, you should spend the money on it to pay for the electrician to do that.
I definitely am going to play it on the safe side when it comes to fire protection systems, and that would allow you to have some redundancy in your system.
Jeanette, thanks for your call. I wouldn't have thought of that. I mean, I would think the power would go out, and then you'd really want to have a battery-operated fire alarm system, but I guess that happens so infrequently, you're better off having it wired in, and then it'll never run out of juice.
Well, yeah, a lot of them have the backups built into it, so it does have that safety in effect. And, you know, one of the challenges as a fire department we have is getting people to actually change the batteries in their detectors, and, which we recommend at the change of time, but at least once a year.
Nancy wrote to us to say dryers cause fires, not cleaning out the lint traps. It happened to us. Is that something that you get calls on fairly frequently?
You know, we do get calls on dryer fires, and the lint traps are definitely something that can be the culprit. Also, which is less talked about, is, you know, the vent in the back of it, making sure that you go back and inspect that and make sure that the vent that actually takes the hot air out of your dryer and out of your house is clean and clear.
Boy, I'll vouch for that. I just happened to do that last summer, and a lot of lint collects in that.
You'd be surprised that what hides in there.
And that can actually catch on fire, even though it's not directly.
Well, it's right next to a heat producing. Yeah. It's actually designed to produce heat, that appliance. So all bets are off when you're with an appliance that produces heat.
Let's go to Jennifer. She's listening to us this afternoon. If you just tuned in, Captain Shada Stevenson with the Seattle Fire Marshal's Office is with us to answer questions about fire prevention. How are you doing today, Jennifer?
Oh, hi. Fine, thanks. I think there's two kind of heating pads now. The new ones go off automatically, and I have one that doesn't. And for a pet that you want to leave it on all day on low with a covering on it, and the pet is smart enough to get off, is it okay to leave a heating pad on when you're out of the house? Is it safe?
Okay, well, I'm definitely not going to recommend, as I said just earlier, anything that is designed to heat. We like to see it unplugged when you leave your home. If you are set on leaving something plugged in that produces heat, you definitely want to make sure that it's evaluated by an independent third party such as UL, Underwriters Laboratory. There are others as well.
Aren't they all these new, you know, heating? I mean, aren't they all come like that? I mean, it's not decades old. It's just a couple of years old.
Yeah, you know, the information will be on the product, so you should verify for yourself.
So but, if it's UL approved, can you leave it plugged in?
I personally wouldn't leave things plugged in while I'm not around.
Oh, okay. Sometimes I worry about just small light, you know, table lamps that... Can those ever be a problem?
Yeah. If it's causing you concern, the best bet is to unplug it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jennifer, thanks for your call. Let's go up to Skagit, where we've got Diane on the line with a question about fires and fire prevention. Good afternoon, Diane.
Hi. I have several fire hazards in my house. For example, my the wall socket for my stove and refrigerator don't work. I tried to fix them, and I can't. I had a fella come out, try to fix it. He couldn't. So I have it plugged into an extension cord, and I have for about 8 or 9 years. And I know it's not good, but I don't have any way to fix it. Are there resources for people who have no money to have these things taken care of?
You know, I would definitely contact City Light about that. I've seen other types of programs that they have in place for people, especially for low-income and vulnerable adults and children. So definitely you can even look it up on the city webpage, City of Seattle, and then Department City Light.
Are you in Seattle, Diane?
No, I'm in Mount Vernon.
What's your utility?
Puget Sound Energy?
You might check with them. Yes. You might just try calling up your utility and explaining the issue to them, and maybe there's a program where they can help you get rid of that extension cord.
Yes, and I would definitely, you know, contact them and explain your situation, explain how long it's been in place, and usually they have people in place that can help you out.
You know, I'll put in a plug right here for people to volunteer to help in their community, because I'm pretty sure I did that 8 or 9 years ago when it happened, and they referred me to the Community Action Agency, which has only volunteer help.
Mm-hmm.
And
so there might be some resources there to help folks out that are in a similar situation.
There wasn't then.
There wasn't then.
And tell your listeners to volunteer to help in their community.
Oh, good. Always good advice. Diane, thanks a lot for your phone call. There's a new national study that suggested that cultural diversity could be having a big impact on firefighting, and Seattle was one of four cities that participated in the lead-up to this study. What are the issues there?
Well, we've actually put into place, we've addressed them, and a lot of the problems that we've come across are just a communications piece, just kind of going out and explaining some of our what we recognize as best practices to avoid catastrophe, you know, fire-related issues. We've actually, in our office, we've come up with a program by our public education, our public educators. It's called Community Fire Safety Advocates. And what it does is it basically has liaisons. We educate liaisons in different communities. We currently are with eight different languages and South African populations or East African populations and Asian populations. And so what we do is we kind of deliver the message of fire safety and the tactics on how to accomplish it. And then they can go out to fairs and festivals and community meetings and brief the incoming community on the best safety practices that we recommend.
Are you looking for volunteers to help you with that?
You know, you can always call and ask, 386-1450, and that's area code 206 for our public education. And I'm sure that they would be more than happy to find out people that are interested in volunteering.
Are newer homes safer homes from a fire perspective?
Well, that's not a yes or no question in many ways. It can be more hazardous because of the lightweight building materials. And also, they don't tend to do as well under prolonged fire exposure.
Really?
Yeah. So I wouldn't necessarily call them safer. Mm-hmm. However, sometimes they can compartmentalize the problem if you have a fire issue and, you can shut the door. They can contain that fire for a while you, go to other places, go to other rooms, but, not in general. I wouldn't say that they're safer than older homes.
We're just about out of time. Up until recently, I had the old knob and tube wiring in my house that goes back probably to the 1920s.
So that is one definitely something that is less safe than modern the way we wire houses today.
Yeah.
Knob and tube is definitely has had more problems than modern.
Mm-hmm. It's expensive to get it changed over. You think it's prudent to do that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot for coming by. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Captain Shada Stevenson with the Seattle Fire Marshal's Office. And that number, once again, just check me out here. Make sure I got it right. 206-386-1450.
That's correct.
Okay. If you want to get some more information about that, we appreciate you stopping by. David Hyde produces our program with Arwin Nixon. We get production help from Molly Williams and Cameron Drews. Andy Hurst is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.